The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Essence Magazine, November 2018 edition. And on the cover of this edition, we have actress Tessa Thompson, and she's just going to go over some of the roles that she's played in thus far. And then we're going to talk about why we must vote. In addition to that, it's our time to heal the past, present, and future of Me Too. Guest edited by Tarana Burke. So let's go ahead and get started. So let's talk a letter from the guest editor. Dreams of my sisters. I have never not loved being a black girl. My mother surrounded me with positive images and ideas of black womanhood from birth. I had only black baby dolls and children's books as a little girl. Our shelves were filled with black feminist literature from Audre Lorde to Toni Morrison, and we listened to recordings of Nikki Giovanni's poetry and the original Broadway cast recording of For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Was Enough. And then there was Essence Magazine. This publication has been a staple in our home since its inception 3 years before my birth, which is why being asked to be guest editor of this issue is one of the proudest moments in my life. As hashtag MeToo became a viral hashtag this past year, we witnessed a watershed moment around the topic of sexual violence across the globe. We saw more public outcry from survivors and demands for accountability for perpetrators than ever before. But not for everyone. As the founder of the MeToo movement, which I originally started for us, I was pained to watch black women yet again being erased from the narrative. I started doing this work because there were so few resources and recourses for us, which is why it cuts deep to hear sisters who are largely responsible for my visibility saying the current iteration of the hashtag MeToo movement isn't for them. We have never had our needs properly documented in the mainstream media. That's why Essence so often feels like a lifeline and why this edition is so vital. This month's special section on sexual violence explores how black women are specifically affected. We tackle the subject from a range of perspectives, shedding light on everything from a culture of silence in our community to the right to heal. For those of us trying to recover, we also highlight five women who have been on the front lines working right alongside me and offer ways for all of us to be part of the solution. And as the nation heads into these crucial midterm elections, we take a look at the issues that matter most to black women and hear from political strategist Simone D. Sanders on how important it is for us to wield our considerable power at the polls and why we must vote. Having led off with the multi-talented Tessa Thompson on the cover, we close with sage advice from fellow actress activist Gabrielle Union. It's a perfect way to end what I think of as my love letter to black women. I am here because we are, and my greatest hope that after reading this month's issue, every sister walks away feeling the same way. Tarana J. Burke, guest editor. So well written. And then she spoke about, you know, some of the issues that we're experiencing, mainly with sexual harassment. And this particular week, what we're going to go over is voting, since, you know, voting actually is this Tuesday. So if you haven't voted, just make sure you go out and vote. And it's going to be Tuesday, November 6th will be voting day. So let's go over issues. Number one, off to the polls. The 2018 midterm elections on Tuesday, November 6th, could very well be the most important election in modern U.S. history, as there are more than 30 races for the Senate and over 200 for the House of Representatives. With key policy issues at stake, ride-sharing service Lyft has pledged to go into underserved communities that face significant obstacles and offer free rides to the polling places. The service has also teamed up with Voto Latina, Urban League affiliates, and the National Federation of the Blind to encourage a stronger vote turnout. In a 2016 survey, the Center for Information and Research on Civil Learning and Engagement, CIRCLE, found that more than 15 million registered voters did not cast a ballot that year because of issues with transportation. So again, we're going to talk about 10 things that we're talking about, and that was number one with off to the polls. Number two, what we're talking about is rowing for the win. Known for the pristine waters and 365 beaches, Antigua and Barbuda hope to add another accolade to their names. On December 12th, Elvira Bell Crystal Clashing, Samira Emanuel, Kavinia Francis, and Julnella King Dove Team Antigua Island Girls will represent the Twin Islands in the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, one of the world's toughest rowing competitions. Number two, breakthrough for moms. So according to the World Health Organization, women of color suffer disproportionately from postpartum depression. Now, there's a new treatment being fast-tracked by the FDA to help childbearing women in need. Brexilon, an antidepressant injection, is the first drug specifically made for the underserved or underrepresented condition. The drug is expected to hit the market by 2019. Number four, Africa Bound. When Alex Haley's Roots was turned into a miniseries, it became the most watched broadcast in TV history. Now a new tour by Peregrine Adventures is giving travelers a chance to see where his family's story began. On Gambia's Kunta Kinte Island, the 8-day cruise also offers excursionists a rare look in at West Africa's wildlife and an immersion into Gambian culture. Number five, Hollywood has spoken. So months after Inclusion Rider became an industry buzzword, Warner Media, the parent company of Warner Brothers, has decided to make its dedication to diversity official. A company-wide policy now requires that positions in front of and behind the camera are filled with inclusion in mind. The guidelines went into effect with Michael B. Jordan's new film, Just Mercy. Number six, quote, you will see women and men being pushed into the shadows and their children stripped from them because they lack the paperwork to declare their humanity. We have to have candidates who are speaking up and standing up for them as well. That's who we are as Americans, end quote. And that was a quote from Georgia hopeful Stephanie Abrams explaining why she's running during a Emily's List luncheon in New York City. Number seven, for the sake of us. The POISE, also known as POISE Foundation, has established another way to help Pittsburgh's Black community. With a seed investment of $10,000, the organization created the Human Equity and Justice Fund. The money, which organizers want to grow to $50,000, will act as immediate financial support to African Americans facing natural disasters, hunger, and social justice issues. Number 8, on the map. Los Angeles is proudly showing its love for our forever president by naming a stretch of road after the 44th Commander-in-Chief. Obama Boulevard will be the new name for Rodeo Road, a major east-west thoroughfare that runs from Jefferson Boulevard to Gramercy Place. The designation becomes official as President's Day 2019. Number 9, the future of business. The University of Pennsylvania Center for Minority Serving Institutions, also known as CMSI, is partnering with recruitment marketing platform The Weather to launch the Mary Ellen Pleasant Entrepreneur Fellowship for future business owners attending HBCUs. The 10-week internship will allow 25 students to create their own career counseling startup. Visit meeptheweather.com. That's M-E-P as in Paul, E, dot the weather, as in T-H-E, W-H-E-T-H-E-R.com before December the 10th to apply. And finally, number 10, access to opportunity. Telecommunications company Verizon Wireless is doubling down on a commitment to provide technology in schools that otherwise could not afford it. The Verizon Innovative Learning Program, which originally launched in 2012, is now expanding to include 50 more schools. That's 150 in total. The program has also organized a coalition of activists ages 11 to 22 to shine a light on education inequality. So moving on to the money and power section, the future 10, Black women in tech. Forget about those depressing stats. These sisters prove that there's room for all of us at the table. So it's no secret that the technology industry has a diversity problem. In 2016, Black folks made up 11.9% of all U.S. workers, yet held only 7.9% of jobs in computer and math occupations, says the Brookings Institution. Black women in particular have been underrepresented, holding only 3% of tech jobs in 2015, according to the National Center for Women and Information Technology. Despite those numbers, it appears that sisters are undaunted by this challenge. Instead of worrying about grim statistics, they are breaking barriers and bridging the gap in the tech world, whether through coding, gaming, or entrepreneurship. We're going to meet 10 ladies making their mark who share why other Black women may want to follow in their footsteps. So before we get into that, let's go over some of the more important, which that's also important, but some other important issues for this week, which, you know, has to do with voting. So I'll come back to that. And this next article that I want to read is called Black Women Rising. So our sisters work overtime to secure our support. A wave of candidates of color is counting on us to do our part. Michelle Obama helped make history in the White House. Now she's addressing one of the most important civic and political issues of our time. Mrs. Obama co-chairs When We All Vote, a national nonpartisan organization aimed at getting folks registered and actually voting, a critical mission ahead of the November 6th midterm elections, which is tomorrow. In the spirit of Fannie Lou Hamer, Coretta Scott King, Rosa Parks, and Ella Baker, the former First Lady, wants more Americans to exercise their power at the polls. Voting is the only way to ensure that our values and priorities are represented in the halls of power, Mrs. Obama said in a statement provided to Essence. The future of our families, our communities, and our country belongs to those of families of us who show up, cast our votes, and make our voices heard. Indeed, Black women voters will play a pivotal role in the midterms amid the rising racial animus that critics blame on the current president, along with persistent police brutality, immigration upheaval, gender inequalities or inequities, and other social and economic issues. Some political experts say it's time to disrupt the status quo at the ballot box. This is the most important midterm of the decade, asserts Melanie L. Campbell, president and CEO of the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation and convener of Black Women's Roundtable, also known as BWR. It will help determine our lives and our children's lives. The stakes could hardly be higher with numerous key races taking place this cycle. All 435 members of the U.S. House of Representatives, that includes 35 senators, 36 governors, and dozens of state legislative offices and local campaigns, plus ballot initiatives. The political landscape generally in this country is tumultuous, and there are a lot of disappointing things happening, says Karen Charles Dongo, a campaign manager for Senator Tim Kaine, a Democrat from Virginia. But for Dongo, who's believed to be the only African-American woman currently heading a U.S. Senate campaign, there's a silver lining. For Black women, there's so much opportunity, she says. Ballot or bust. So since the 2016 presidential election, some 40,000 women have sought information on running for office, according to Emily's List, which spends millions to support women candidates. Black women are part of that wave who can win, says Glenda Carr, co-founder of Higher Heights for America, which works to elect African American women. Carr cites Stacey Abrams, who's making a groundbreaking bid for Georgia governor. Lauren Underwood, a nurse and former Obama appointee who's running to represent Illinois. And Georgia congressional candidate Lucy McBath, a flight attendant who became a gun safety advocate after a white man fatally shot her teen son, claiming his music was too loud. In other races, educator Johanna Hayes hopes to become the first Black congresswoman from Connecticut. And Ilhan Omar of Minnesota wants to break barriers as the first Somali American Muslim woman in Congress. They're just a few of new varied crop of committed Black women candidates. Women of color across the country will lead a progressive multiracial coalition in swing states like Michigan and Florida, and states like Georgia and Arizona and beyond, predicts Amy Allison, president of Democracy in Color, a group that champions a diverse new American majority in politics. These are states that Trump won in 2016, that we can turn from red to blue. To achieve this goal, a cadre of black women is working behind the scenes as organizers, fundraisers, strategists, and more. Black women and labor unions, including Julie Green, who heads the AFL-CIO's mobilization hub, are making key decisions around this election, while the I Am 2018 voting campaign of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, which has 1.6 million members, aims to engage communities of color. A special focus is reaching 18 to 34 year old African American and Hispanic voters through social media, says Dorothy Townsend, the Southern Regional Organizing Director of AFSCM. Anita Johnson, a coordinator of Vote Riders, a national nonpartisan nonprofit that educates the public about voter ID, voter suppression, can potentially occur and disenfranchise eligible voters. People get confused between voter ID laws and voter registration laws, says Johnson. It's important that African American women understand the difference and know the changes to the law so they can vote in each election and be part of the democratic process. On to our next article. We're going to continue on with money and power. It's called Perspective: Why We Must Vote. So on the precipice of one of the most consensual midterm elections of our lifetime, top political strategist Simone D. Sanders urges us to heed the bold legacy of Fannie Lou Hamer and her political crusade. So on August the 22nd, 1964, Fannie Lou Hamer went before the Democratic National Committee to insist that the Mississippi Freedom Party, an organization she started to help African Americans register to vote, be seated to integrate the all-white Mississippi delegation to the Democratic National Convention. Then President Lyndon B. Johnson tried to silence Hamer. His aides and allies pressured her not to speak. And in a final effort to keep her from being heard, President Johnson called an impromptu press conference so her words would not be televised. Fortunately, his plan to distract reporters backfired. Hamer's 13-minute testimony detailing the inequities visited upon black people who just wanted to vote in the land they called home was aired later that evening on primetime. Hamer was a political force who would not be ignored, a local leader who thought globally she knew she could not afford to sit back and let the injustices of her time go unchallenged and unchecked, famously proclaiming, "I am sick and tired of being sick and tired." Hamer was a rabble rouser who worked with an intergenerational coalition to get things done. Before the 1964 DNC convention, the civil rights community knew Hamer's work was making a difference. August 22nd, 1964 was merely the day that mainstream America was introduced to her greatness. She walked forcefully into a space that tried to exclude her, and she created room for herself and for us. Standing in the grab for the millions of black women who would follow her, in 1964, Fannie Lou Hamer spoke for all of us. 54 years later, one of the most far-reaching midterm elections of our lifetime is before us. And while black women have emerged as loyal participants in the political process, often throwing our support behind Democratic candidates, recent data suggests we are sick and tired of being taken for granted by the political apparatus as a whole. In 2016, 94% of the black women who voted selected Hillary Clinton in the presidential election. But overall, African-American turnout was down. Among black women, according to the Pew Research Center, the turnout was 64.1% in 2016 versus 70.7% 4 years earlier. Meanwhile, turnout among white women increased to 66.8% in 2016, up from 65.6% in 2012. A 2018 survey by the Black Women's Roundtable, in essence, delved deeper, finding that while 98% of black women polled are currently registered to vote, their support for the Democratic Party has dropped significantly years later. The survey also found that in 2018, a higher percentage of black women indicated neither party best represents our interests. So if on the day Hamer spoke before the 1964 DNC convention, she pushed her way through a crowd of men to the front of the room, armed with only a white purse and suited in a floral dress. She sat down at the table and delivered her testimony. When she was finished, she got up, grabbed her purse, and walked out the door. She notes no bells and whistles. She simply went back to doing the work. To be clear, our votes should be earned. Attention needs to be paid to issues that affect us, and politicians and political parties need to invest in our communities. If they want our support, black women should not blindly give our votes to any one political party or candidate, and no one should expect us to. But we also have to do our part. The life and legacy of Fannie Lou Hamer teaches us that we have to demand what we are due. We have to be willing to march into convention halls and make our case in the face of misogyny, racism, and classism. We must actively put pressure on the levers of power to bend them to our will. We cannot afford to waver in our political participation because we have the most to lose. I stand on the shoulders of Fannie Lou Hamer. It is in recognition of her spirit that I fight every day to ensure that the voices of young people, progressives, working people, and black women will be heard and be counted. This moment, this election, this is for Fannie. And this was written by strategic communications consultant Simone D. Sanders, where she served as national press secretary for Bernie Sanders during the 2016 presidential campaign and is currently a CNN political commentator. So it looks like that we've run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Nicole Hunter, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, www.trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long until next time.